At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Happy Monday to you. Made it through the weekend. I had a really good one. I'm feeling great today. I hope you're feeling good too. You know though, everyone's not really feeling that good right now. I have been reached out to by hundreds and hundreds of people since my Joe Rogan appearance, and just telling me how me talking about my depression has helped them so much. And of course, I always hear from you guys, because I talk about it even in more depth on here about it. And you guys have kind of, if you've been listening to the show long enough, even if you've been listening to the show for like 3 weeks, you've been through it with me, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from you, and it always makes me feel so good. But man, the windfall I've gotten from the Rogan appearance of just people saying that it made them feel less alone. They felt suicidal ideations. They felt feelings of worthlessness. Like, I don't even remember what I said on his show, and I'm reluctant to go back and watch because I don't like to watch myself. But whatever I said really resonated. And let me just tell you all, if you related to me or have ever related to me about depression, there's hundreds and hundreds and thousands of us. Everyone's going through it. I heard from so many friends who are going through it that I didn't even know about. I have so many friends who are getting on antidepressants right now, and it's not because they heard I was getting on them, and they kind of reached out to me being like, hey, I heard you talking about it, and like, it's so weird. I just got on something too. I'm going to pick it up now. I talked to someone yesterday who's like, I'm on my way to pick something up as I'm listening to your Rogan about getting on meds. So I just want to put it out there that we're all not alone on this. Like, the world is burning right now. There's two hurricanes coming at us. The fires are like the second worst fires ever in California. And unless you're like reading about it, you can kind of forget about it. But like, the world's kind of like ending around us, and it's really scary. I'm just trying to practice gratitude every day that everyone I know and love is safe. And that my biggest concern some days are like, what car am I going to buy? Like, what a fucking gift that is what's stressing me out. Where am I going to move? Like, oh no, am I going to remember my jokes for my tour? Like, what great problems to have in perspective to, just fucking Beirut, for God's sake. Remember Beirut happening a couple weeks ago? We don't talk about that anymore. Did they just sweep it all up and everything's fine? Of course not. It's still awful over there. It's just so fun. There's so many calamities worldwide that we can quickly move from one to the next and just forget. Like the Australian brush fires, I was joking about that in March, how like we just like slapped a Band-Aid on a koala and called it a die. And like literally it's just like was the end of the world du jour. You know, like every day there's a new thing to freak out about. So it's no wonder we're all freaking depressed right now. I haven't got on meds yet. I just want to give you an update of that. I am going to be very soon. I have an appointment on Wednesday. I haven't gotten my ADHD test back yet either. I guess it takes 2 weeks to process that, but I didn't even talk to you about what was like going in there. So I go to this office. I paid $1,100 to get tested for this, by the way, and it is not covered by insurance. So like I really want this diagnosis. Or I want to just be in the clear. Although if they tell me I don't have ADHD, I'm so convinced I have it, I will go see someone else, because I feel like the test was a little skewed towards men, which ADHD, that's why it's so often misdiagnosed in women, is because the tests are for boys, because science can often be very sexist, as you know, you should know. But the thing is, women with ADHD, this is my theory. I'm going to put it out there. I don't think women have the hyperactivity as much, you know, bouncing off the walls. Maybe it has something to do with our hormones or our just like disposition as women who are like, you know, more sensitive beings. But I think it has something to do with the fact that boys are allowed to be running around a classroom kind of crazily. And like teachers kind of roll their eyes and are like, oh, Jonathan, will you please sit down? And it's like, it's not as shameful, but if like a girl's running all over the place, like you, it's, you get yelled at more as a girl. I think that girls are more punished, at least for me. I don't relate to wanting to run around, but it wasn't even an option to run around. I wanted to be invisible in class when I was young. I just didn't want, I didn't want boys to tease me. I didn't want anyone to make fun. Like I wanted to float by under the radar my entire pre-adolescence and post-adolescence, really. Until I started doing comedy, I just wanted to be invisible, I think. And so I would have to suppress any hyperactivity I had because I just didn't want to be, I didn't want to get in trouble. So I haven't gotten the results back. It's going to take a bit, but if I don't get the results I want, I will go somewhere else. I will seek a second opinion because I've done all the research. People keep sending me other things I could be. People are like, are you sure you're not bipolar? Are you sure you're not borderline? Are you sure you don't have a pebble in your shoe? Are you sure that, you know, is it because you're living with your parents? I mean, there's so many different things. I keep taking all these tests. Like, am I bipolar? Am I borderline? None of them have resonated as much as the ADHD test. So I really do think this could be the solution for me. So when that comes back, I'll let you know what they say. This weekend was good for me. I had a lot of time alone. My parents went to the cabin to, I call it the fucking cabin. Like, it sounds like I'm being like, oh, the fucking cabin, but I call it the fucking cabin because that's what they do there. And they left me alone, which was fun. I had a really good Friday night. They were at the cabin on Saturday night, but Friday night, my mom went to bed early and my dad and I stayed up. And I had gotten home from doing a set at the Funny Bone. I did two sets last night on Saturday, and I've been doing sets a lot, and it feels almost like back to normal. But I got home from a set, and I watched my dad wanted to stay up, and like he, I think, ate an edible, so he was like in the mood to like hang out and like chill. And so we watched the movie It's Complicated, the Nancy Meyers movie. And I'd never seen it, even though I know that I love her stuff and it would probably be one of my favorite movies because I love Alec Baldwin and I love Steve Martin. And Meryl Streep, I've always been like, oh, she's fine. But she was fantastic in this. It's a great movie. I know you've probably seen it. There's definitely obnoxious parts about it. Like the kids are all really annoying. Like my sister and I were talking about the movie today and we're like, the kids are so just like over the top, like saccharine and like, just like mom and dad. Like they're just take this part out. Okay. So, I loved it. I thought it was like so fun, such a fun little comedy romp. And I know that everyone always talks about like Nancy Meyer's kitchens and everything, but it's just like, there's something about the cinematography of her movies that is just so delightful. Alec Baldwin is so phenomenal in this. And Meryl Streep is just like doing her thing the whole movie, which is just like, oh, 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 and just playing with her hair. And I did feel good because Meryl Streep and I have like the same hair consistency right now. Like hers looks about as thin as mine. And I'm like, she's making it work. So I felt like I was literally like, yes, I have the same hair as Meryl Streep. And like Alec Baldwin wants to fuck her. So I'm in the clear. Like that was what was going through my mind as I watched it. It was really cute, though. I think I'll always remember watching It's Complicated with my dad, even though we didn't finish it because we both got tired. But he was just so – he was telling me about a scene that we stopped the movie because we wanted to go to bed. But him describing an upcoming scene to me and him, like, crying, laughing – again, a little bit of an edible in his system. But he was laughing so hard about the scene where Steve Martin is on Skype with Meryl Streep. And then Meryl Streep goes to the bathroom and leaves the computer on the bed. And then Alec Baldwin comes in and like strips down naked and like poses on the bed waiting for her. And he puts the laptop in front of his penis so that when she walks in, he like is, you know, just covered right there. But little does he know, Steve Martin's like camera is facing it. And it's, my dad was describing the scene and like laughing so hard. It was so cute. And then he was talking about Steve Martin's sense of humor. And then we started pulling up old Johnny Carson clips of Steve Martin. And then if, you know, one thing led to another, I mean, you never want to use that phrase when you're talking about hanging out with your dad. And then one thing led to another, but it did. And then we were watching Rodney Dangerfield and I was just like, fucking yes. I love these old, like Steve Martin's old stuff didn't really resonate with me. I think it was like in the time it was really, really funny. And he's obviously a wacky wild guy or whatever. And I've always appreciated him, especially like, you know, when he was, I first fell in love with Steve Martin in, what's that wedding movie? Father of the Bride. So good. But Rodney Dangerfield, so many good jokes. And it reminded me of Hedberg a lot. So I pulled up Hedberg, Mitch Hedberg, which my dad knows of, but didn't like really know. And boy, was that freaking fun. Just watching my dad watch Mitch Hedberg. We were laughing so hard. We originally turned off the movie to go to bed and then we stayed up another hour just watching comedy clips. And I'm just rediscovering a real love of stand-up and like joke writing. And it's just triggered something in my brain that has, it's like me in 2004, three, four, five, when I didn't really know who I was as a comedian, I would just talk about like, I would just like write jokes like Hedberg. All I would do is read Hedberg jokes, read Sarah Silverman's jokes. Like I was always reading jokes and just trying to figure out structure and just all I wanted to do is write, you know, switcheroonies, you know, jokes like the one joke that I remember from my childhood where my dad was watching Wendy Liebman on The Tonight Show. And she had a joke where she goes, so you guys, I just quit smoking crack. And that was it. But it was just such a perfect little misdirect. And I've always just tried to write jokes like that, which a lot of my act is still that, where I still actually reveal, I can talk and tell stories about myself, but actually have jokes like that. But I don't know, man. Something switched in my brain recently and I'm back to writing jokes like that. And I'm having so much fun with it. It's a more arduous process because to write an entire bit, like I've been jealous of Mitch Hedberg because I'm like, oh my God, he never had bits. He just would jump from one joke to the next and like could sustain an hour of just non sequiturs. But for me, I feel like I just might get back into one-liners. I don't know. My next album, it could just be all one-liners. I want to challenge myself because there is such a fun, fine art to it. And at some point you just, for me, I've been like, oh, they've all been done. But I'm still finding ways to crack jokes open. And I was thinking if Mitch Hedberg was still alive, if he lived past 2003, he would still be writing jokes. So there's jokes that he would have written that haven't been written that maybe I could crack because they're sitting right there. They're just words you need to find a way to put together in an order. So for instance, like I don't even want to tell you the jokes I wrote yesterday because I'm developing an act, but I've been like on a roll writing one-liners and it's really freaking fun. I've been going up at the Funny Bone, like I said, every night this week. And one of my favorite local comics, one of my best friends, when I lived back home here in St. Louis between 2009 and 2010 and before I moved to New York. I was in LA before that, came here for a pit stop. I was going to be here for like a month and then I stayed for a year and a half, which is kind of repeating itself as we speak. But in that time, I developed a really close friendship with my friend Sean O'Brien, and he works at the Funny Bone. He's a bartender there. That, you know, they were shut down since from March until July. They just opened and now I'm going up there again. I'm getting to see him a lot. And, he actually came out to LA or to New York 2 years ago last year and was on my radio show, You Up. I flew him out because I got to go to see U2 at, where was it? The Apollo. U2, the band, and it's his favorite band. So I flew him to New York and he slept on my couch and we went to see U2 and it was so much fun. But I was just thinking, I got a lot of feedback that people really enjoyed listening to me with Rogan. People who listen to the podcast were like, oh, it was fun to hear you like interacting with someone again. And I know that I had Anya on the show last week and Noah was on as well. I want to incorporate more people again. And because this is kind of how I socialize. So when we get back, I'm going to sit down with my friend, Sean O'Brien. He's coming over. He's in the kitchen right now talking to my dad. I think he just arrived. My dad is wearing his shirt. He's, by the way, he doesn't just work at the Funny Bone. He is a comedian. He bartends there, but he's so freaking funny. And we just have a lot of stories and a lot of history. And we're just becoming friends again after like years of, you know, it's been since 2010 that we were hanging out all the time, but I'm excited to have him on the show. I think he's going to be a regular for however long I stay in St. Louis, but my dad's wearing his shirt the Sean O'Brien shirt he bought because Sean works the road and sells merch. And it's like this shirt that says Sean O'Brien's name. My dad put it on because he was so excited Sean was coming over. And so they're in the kitchen right now catching up. I promised my parents that Sean would wear a mask inside. And it's just so funny. When I used to want to have people over for the podcast, like in March or April, it would be this huge ordeal with my parents. Like they didn't want anyone in the house. Even getting Andrew to stay here in July was kind of like, I had to get permission. But now things are just like every day this thing changes. And as long as he has a mask inside, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, I've been performing every night at the club with a mask on. I've tested negative for COVID twice since doing these shows. I feel really safe as long as you just wear a mask inside. That's all you got to do. I'll talk about all of this and more with Sean O'Brien when we get back. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome back to the show. I am joined by my friend who I already teased, and I teased mean like I set you up, not that I was like made fun of you.
Oh, well,
but no, I could do that too.
No, you should.
Yeah.
I think it's fun taking bullets.
Yeah, you take a lot of them.
Then they're like, if you take the shit, then nobody really hammers you that hard.
Yeah, you think so?
I do. And that's why I love the shit of myself. One, just because I really don't love myself. But two, if I hammer myself that hard, then people are like, well, fuck, he beat me. He beat
that's
me to
really
it.
Good point. I think that is why I tend to do it too. Because people always go, oh, we love the way you are so self-deprecating on stage. Or like, I often get told I'm self-deprecating and I don't even notice I'm doing it. But I'm like,
right.
Oh, it's just such a defense mechanism. So I beat you to
right.
it.
Right.
I'm talking with Sean O'Brien, who is one of my best friends who moved to St. Louis. What year did, like 2006?
06, January 1, 06.
Oh,
yeah, it's crazy.
06, man. You've been here a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we became close in 2009, I think, is when I moved back. Maybe we met before then.
We probably met before that, yeah, because I started in 08. And you were actually
comedy.
On my first open mic. I remember that.
Right.
And
was I nice
yeah.
to you?
Yeah, you were great.
Really?
That's the thing.
I always like when people tell me of the first time they met me, because I'm generally very nice to people when they're like, I remember you back then. I'm like, oh, good, I was nice. Like, it's been rare that I've disappointed myself and been like a cunt to someone.
No, you were always kind. In fact, I remember, what's his name? Jeff Wetzel, that he was an asshole.
Yeah, my ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
He was an asshole too.
And I remember I was like, I'm going to fight this guy. And I don't fight. I was like, and I'd probably lose just because I'm not a fighter anyways, but he was just a bully to me.
Yeah. Some people can be, why?
I got really fucking, like, it took me back to fifth grade where I'm like, to this guy, Steve Orzechowski, who would just fucking mess with me constantly. And I was like, I want to fight him, but I don't know
what
how.
What would
and I'm
he
scared.
Say?
I remember he would just be like, oh, Brian, nice hair. I had like this dumb part in my hair and like this flip.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad, in fairness to him.
In fifth grade?
He made a good point.
Yeah.
But he would, and he did this thing once where he just went up to my ear. And he do this pop sound, like this loud, he's like, hey, Sean,
so
I gotta tell
mean.
You something. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I just, it was just this ooh sound I had for like an hour.
He would like break your eardrum.
Yeah, yeah. And I was really rattled. I never told people.
See,
and I was really
like,
rattled.
Honestly, like that's just flat out abusive.
Yeah, it was. It was. But
man.
I was in denial of it. And I was like, just avoid him. But
worse.
His locker was right. His last name was an O. I'm an O. And we were right next to each other. And I would just, I'd see him.
Bitch.
I'd be like, I'm not going to my locker.
Yeah.
But then nobody else fucked with me. But this guy was just a fucking problem. And to this day, if I ever saw that kid, I'd be like, you're a piece of shit. I would definitely love him to have it.
Wait, do we know where he is?
I have no idea. He could be dead. And I hope
he
is.
You should,
I really
have
do.
Have you never been tempted to look up your fifth grade bully?
No, he's got a weird last name. It's like some like
Orzechowski.
I don't even know how to spell it. So
okay,
that's what I'm
so
saying. Like,
I don't
even know how to put it in right.
Okay. Well, that's the
but
problem
that
with
really
girl bullies in high school or in like when you're growing up. It's the problem with being a girl in general when you're trying to find someone from your past. Wait, sorry, bring the mic closer to you. Okay. That's the problem with being a girl, is that oftentimes you, Noah, should we start over?
No, just keep unusable? Going.
Okay. You can't find girls from your past because they get married and they change their names. And so they don't.
Right.
That's the problem with this. Like, when you get married as a woman, you completely kiss who you were before goodbye. And you could become a missing person, essentially. Like,
sure.
You can start over. I mean, there's something kind of cool about it. You can just, like, completely, no one can find you. You can reinvent yourself. But there is something sad about, like, you can't track down anyone that you, any girl you knew in middle school, because they're all fucking married now. Like, I can't even find girls I was, like, maybe friends with. I was thinking about looking up some girls from my past just to, like, maybe get some friends in St. Louis. And I'm like, well, they all have, you know, weird ass names now. And and so I can't find them. But you got to find this kid. It is very interesting, though, that, the bullying thing, like, no one else fucked with you except this one kid.
Just one guy.
Kid.
And I remember his face. He had a hoop earring.
Ew.
Like, picture him clear as day.
He had bad parents and they let him get a hoop earring in fifth grade. I mean, exactly. I guess my parents let me get my ears pierced when I was in third grade, but, like, having a hoop, I mean, anyone who bullies like that is dealing with a lot of shit. So you can all, you gotta find some place in your heart a little bit to be like, wonder what he was going through.
You do. And then you wonder today, maybe the kid's just a good egg. Maybe he's just like some solid guy.
I doubt it.
Cause I was kind of a piece of shit to kids in high school. I wasn't a bully. But I was kind of, I would kind of like be part of the mob mentality.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, fuck him. But I wouldn't like be mean to him, but I wouldn't defend him. And I have a lot of regret about that. Like,
because
like,
too.
I know that feeling. And that's what I was kind of getting with Jeff. And we were fine. We made
my
up.
Ex-boyfriend.
Yeah,
was
yeah. Because I was like, hey, I'm going
to
fight you. Like, I'm going to fucking punch you in the face. And if I go to jail or you punch back, we'll just deal with what happens.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, Brian. Whoa. And his shoulders
moved. He used to call you no, Brian. Yeah, that was my first boyfriend, was who you're referring to. I became romantically involved with him, I guess, in 08 to 09. Yeah, like in 08 was when we
that
first like got together.
Yeah, yeah.
He was my first. I was 24 and I was like so excited that I just had a boyfriend. And then it turns out he was...
That was baffling. I'll still never get it. I mean, I love you. I really do. But I was almost angry. Not in a jealous way, but just like, why?
I was wondering if he was going to move back here from New York. I think he's doing all right. He wrote for me for a lot of the roast, like all of the roasts, essentially.
Oh, did
he?
Yeah.
And he wrote some of my like favorite jokes. That's why I fell for him, is he was like a brilliant joke writer, as you know. Like, he was just so funny. And
there's no denying
even the guys on in the New York scene who like knew him later on were just like he's
he was like king of like open mics and stuff, right? But not saying that he was an open micer, but like Greg told me he would just be like, he would walk in and be like, dude, this guy's a machine.
Yeah, well, everyone reveres his writing. So I think my attraction to him, which I know you didn't understand, and like a lot of people didn't. Well, first of all, he just like made a real good move on me. Like, he just like, he was pretty aggressive with like sexually with me.
Right.
Which
you
I needed that at that moment. I was just so, I felt so stunted sexually and like around boys, which I still do. I liked him. And as soon as I decided I did, I was like, oh God, I need this guy to like make a move. And he just did. I mean, he was drunk. That's why he was able to do it.
Right.
And then once that happened, it was off to the races. But it was really because he was the best joke writer in town. And I was like, I want to be around that. And I want that to want me, because if he likes me, then clearly then I'm a good joke writer, even though guys don't really give a fuck about that, which I came to realize later. Like, he did respect me comedically. I know that. But there was something about wanting to be like the cool comedy couple and I just really am attracted to guys that I'm like, wow, he's so smart. And like, I don't know. I get like boners for guys when they're talented. And you're like, and it wasn't just about him being, he wasn't like famous or anything. Cause sometimes people accuse me of being like a star fucker or like, he wasn't like, it was the open mic scene. So maybe he was like the most famous on the open mic scene, but it wasn't about that. I really think I'm just attracted to like when I see someone who just like blows me away in like brilliance. Like, I went through like a fucking Bo Burnham like obsession back in like December.
Oh, really?
Do you know Bo Burnham?
Of course,
stuff?
Yeah.
He's so fucking smart.
Yeah.
And like in the way, and comedically smart, that I like, I understood when people say that they're sapiosexuals in terms like they get turned on by someone's intelligence. I was just thought that was like, you're just like, don't, you're gay.
Right.
If you have to say that you're like, you're not attracted to women's boobs, you just like their brains. I'm like, I don't know. Right. It's kind of weird.
It sounds surfacely horseshit.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. But I get it. Like, I think sometimes I can be really attracted to people's talent. And I don't think it's, maybe it's just because I want, it validates me in some way if they like me. And so I'm trying to get them to like me, because then it'll make me feel like I'm smart. But I think it's just like, that I'm just like, maybe it's biological. Maybe I want to make a baby with that smart guy because he's right. The smartest, and then our kids will survive longer because they'll have survival skills. Like maybe it goes to some kind of cavewoman impulse, but I don't know.
No, it makes sense. I mean, if you're going to pull rank on someone in the terms of how they are with their career, I mean, you'd be lying if you said you don't find it a little attractive that person is successful in what they're doing.
Yes.
You know, that's where I think comedy's so tough. When you go up and you eat shit in front of people that you respect and like, you're just like, not only did I eat shit, I look like a fucking loser. I really do. I failed at something I shouldn't. Like the other night I was up and you popped in and
funny
bone. I ate it hard.
That is not true. I think you're fucking insane to say that because honestly, I would tell you if you ate shit. I have no reason to lie to you.
I think it was last Sunday.
It really bothers me when you do that because sometimes you will say something about yourself and I'll be like, well, that's just not true. And I've been there before where I just don't see myself clearly. You were so funny. And first of all, didn't you just learn that your mom was in the hospital like
I did.
Seconds
so
before you walked
on stage?
In fairness
to me, I did. Literally just found out my mom.
So tell me how that went down.
Oh, it was crazy. I was texting my sister before the show and my mom's, you know, long story, she's sick. She's in the hospital. She's okay now.
She's home.
At the time, it was kind of rocky.
COVID though, right?
They didn't know.
Right. Because it was kind of a lungy type thing.
Yes. Yeah. She had blood in the lungs. She's had a hard time breathing. She's 74. She's out of shape. She's bad health. All that. So, which is my own fault because I shouldn't even fuck with my phone unless I'm just looking at my notes before I go up. You know, but you can't, it's just there. You can't help me get a message, right?
No one does that. No one turns off their phone before they're going up in front of seven people at the fucking Westport.
Right. And that's also what it was too. It was like eight people.
Yeah, it was no one.
I tried some new things and it was just eating shit. And my stupid style is I have half-cooked ideas. I go up, I kind of riff on them. Either they land somewhat okay and I keep developing or they're just like, this guy's just yelling and saying fuck at the end. And nobody knows why.
Sean, which is that's comedy. Can I just tell you?
No.
That's what I do. That honestly is my, I promise you, that is my technique. Now, when I started out early on, I used to write jokes and really like try to work like in a notebook and like focus on the jokes themselves and where's the punchline, the setup and everything. But now I just do essentially that. I think that's just your style and that's like what serves you as a comedian. Instead of like beating yourself up about that being your style, because it's not the same as, you know, some of the guys we hang out with in St. Louis who we look up to who like are very diligent about doing morning pages and like looking at jokes as like math problems, which I was just talking about earlier is how I kind of want to reapproach stand-up. But I tend to do the same thing. You just go up, you have like maybe one half of a concept, like maybe one funny thought in your head that you know will get a laugh and then nothing else. And you just hope that if you talk enough, it'll like fill in on stage.
Correct. And that's where if I have one gift, people are, I'll just be talking in regular conversation and someone like Greg will be like, that's funny.
Yeah. Greg Warren. Yes.
Greg Warren. Sorry. Greg
Warren.
Yeah.
Local comic Greg Warren.
Correct. And he'll just be like, why isn't that? And I'm like, I don't even know that's a bit. Like, that's where my brain doesn't connect to.
You don't know why
you're
funny.
I don't even know that with that thing I just told you without even trying. I'm not trying to run a fucking joke on you. I'm just talking casually. And you're like, that needs to go in the act. That's where I'm trying to capture that by just doing that on stage. Being like, all right, just transfer. Like I'm talking to you organically.
Yeah.
Put that on stage right now.
I
clam up and I'm just like, oh, fuck.
You know what I would do? And this is just me saying something that I should do more of. And this is truly it. It's like, you need to tell everyone in your life that you talk to on a regular basis. If I ever say anything that you think is funny, tell me to write it down. Just do me a favor and say, write that down. Because you can always convince yourself not to write it down. Even though sometimes you get a good laugh with like socially.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, oh, that was good. I'll remember it later. You'll never remember it.
You're right.
So tell people to tell you to write stuff down. And then you have tons of punchlines because you do talk in punchlines, dude. Like that's just, you're just like a funny person. That's just how you are. But I think that just to refine it a little bit is like, make sure the people in your life are on you about writing it down and actually do it. And don't say, Because as comics, a lot of times we'll go, I'll say to a comic like, that's really good. You should write that down. And then we just kind of go, And then I go, No. Really write that down.
Literally put it down.
I have to do that all the time. I did Greg the other day. And now I'm making myself do it more because I can't just rely on getting up there and just being able to recreate those moments or like, I think it's just lazy to get up and think you're going to figure it out up there.
Where I'm confused you saying this is that maybe that was you in 10 years ago. But like when I see you go up, even on these scare shows, sometimes at the Funny Bone, it seems like you're doing fine. Am I wrong in this?
You're so wrong.
Really?
First of all, you didn't eat it the other night. The joke that I walked in on was so funny about you with your dog. at the park, your giant ass dog.
Yeah, my
that had so many punchlines. I was like, honestly, that made me kind of look at, have to look at my notes again and be like, okay, well, I guess we're doing punchlines tonight with like tags. So got to look and kind of not just wing it, Blazer. I mean, it really did. You, that was like a fully, that was a really good bit. What, what's going on with your dog? You got a big ass dog.
Yeah. I got an English Mastiff Great Dane.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that like the two biggest?
It's
breeds?
Like two. Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
Yeah,
he's a heavy son of a bitch.
Uh-huh.
He's great though. Yeah.
How heavy?
He's 155 pounds.
Jesus Christ! Yeah,
but I think he's done, unless he just gets like fat. But he's done growing.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Because
which I hope he stops, because it's actually bad for dogs to be that big. Like it's like bad on their joints and shit. He's got to take
that's
like
the largest dog
turmeric.
I've ever heard of.
Yeah, yeah, he's big. It may be like 150, but
okay,
yeah. I mean, he's right around. He was at least 140 like 6 months ago.
Love
so.
Him so freaking
I'm
much.
Obsessed.
Yeah.
In fact, this is how fucked up my head is. All I think about is him dying and then how I'm going to be when he dies. And I don't think I can, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I think about it and then I cry while he's fucking fine. He's on my bed. We're hanging out. And I just let my brain go run wild.
Yeah.
And I go down this path. And in 5 minutes, I'm just in tears on my bed while nothing's wrong.
I mean, are you depressed right now?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in denial of it.
Well, that doesn't sound like you are. You just said yes.
I mean, I'm in denial. Like, here's my problem. I don't know. I'm more not depressed as in sad, except when I think about my dog dying, as I just don't care.
Mm.
Like, there's this give up that is in my brain that has been going a lot longer, and hitting 40 really fucked with me.
Yeah.
Cause then you're like, now you start looking at your friends and I'm like, I don't even care about the marriage shit. Like that never really bothered me, but just the financial success is pretty minimal for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And my drive is so down. And now I'm just like, maybe I should just go on medication. Like I want to be like, something's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like the, what I don't want to hear is, oh, you're just lazy and you're not grinding.
No, it's not. And that's not the case, Sean. I was just talking about this before you got here about how everyone I know right now is getting on medication, including myself. I'm getting on something on Wednesday.
Are you?
And I've been on stuff before, and it just gives you a place to start from where you don't, it gives you that like base where you can like, it's not going to make you happy overnight. You need a little bit of help, and it's not your fault. Like you aren't lazy. There is something chemically going on in your brain that you can't help. It's like a disease.
Do you
know,
you really think that?
I 100% think that you have depression and that it's something that could be a lot of your pain and like could be alleviated with have you ever been on them before?
No, I almost did. And I actually talked about it a few years ago and I was close.
Yeah.
And then I just talked my, cause I'm open to pills. Like I have no problem getting on a medication,
yeah,
but
love
in
a
my
pill.
Head, I was like, oh, you're just being a lazy fat shit. Like,
no, see, that's the disease.
Is. You're just being, you know, and that's where the denial of, maybe you are.
I think that's like
chemically.
That means that you qualify to get on it. If you're like, your brain's coming up with ways to convince you that you don't deserve to be on it because it's an easy way out. And actually you're just lazy. Like I have a lot of that too. It's like why I'm getting so excited about possibly having ADD is because when I read the symptoms of it, like online, one of them was like, you have a messy room and like a messy locker, a messy desk. You're like your stuff is always constantly a mess. You're always losing things. You're always forgetting things. And I cried when I read that because I was like, oh my God, that's not just me being a fucking piece of lazy shit. Like I felt like my entire life, there could be something in my brain that's like, that's not my fault.
Correct.
And the truth is anything we're going through is not our fault. You don't want to be depressed. You don't want to feel like you're lazy. You don't want to feel unmotivated. You didn't ask for any of these things. You're not a piece of shit. It's like you're suffering with something that if you can get a little bit of a step up, like if you can get a little bit of a boost from something like an antidepressant, like I think I love that you're open to it. And I honestly think you should call, like you should go this week. Like I think everyone right now should like, you suck it up, suck your pride up and like do it. Just try it because you can go off it. I mean, it's you know, takes a little bit to wean off them and it might take you a while to find the right one. Yeah. But like, it's you don't try to white knuckle this. You've been trying to white knuckle it for fucking 20 years, probably feeling a little bit of this.
Right.
Do you still drink a lot?
No, I quit basically. I mean, I'm not saying like I quit as in I'll never drink again, but I've had between the pandemic and today, I drank April 25th, which was my birthday, like 3 fucking beers or whatever.
Okay.
And that's it.
Wow.
So I haven't drank really. Last time I drank was probably like early February.
Yeah.
I haven't touched
it. That's incredible.
Which is so odd because I'm such an addict on so many things.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd have a hard time quitting booze, just in the sense that
it
was,
might not
it was
be your thing as
week.
Much as you thought it was.
No, it's actually, it's not. And actually it was pretty easy for me.
Mm, yeah. Then maybe
I didn't even
didn't,
really have a problem like
thing.
Stop drinking. Like I just don't drink anymore. And it didn't even occur to me that I'm like, oh, you haven't had a drink in 4 months or 3 months.
I think that, that's the way it was for me with drinking. I mean, I had to read that book, the Alan Carr book that I turn everyone on to.
Right.
And that really got me jump started to be like, I don't need to do this anymore. But I think, I don't know that I'm an alcoholic. I think that I could probably like have a beer and not like end up in a gutter tomorrow, but I don't think I have that like the craving that people talk about when they have alcoholism, where they have one drink and then they just can't stop. I have that with other substances in my life, like with food and with starving myself. Like I can get addicted to those things, and but I think that with like alcohol, but thank God I'm not like drinking right now. I couldn't.
Oh God, I
think
that's terrible for
you. If anything, you should be proud of yourself for taking a step back from booze, because it would be an easy thing to really indulge in during this time, and that's. Not that you said it hasn't been hard, but you had to make a choice to not drink right now.
Right.
You could easily drink right now. You work in a bar.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of you, it sounds like to me, that is motivated to be doing something good for yourself.
For sure. For sure. Well, for me too, it was just a physical feeling. Then it was the next day syndrome where the anxiety from a hangover was unbearable.
Right.
I mean, I was shaky.
What would you, just because from what you said, what you did, about bigger things?
Overall, my whole body just felt like it just got hit by a truck the night before.
Right.
And I was just on edge and my heart would kind of race. Mm. And I knew that would happen. Every time I drank, I'd be like, all right, you're going to drink on Saturday, Sunday, just stay in bed and watch TV because you're going to be sick.
Yeah, you'd like prepare for it. It's like, why even do this to yourself? Is it worth it? Yeah. I mean, that's the way I've been feeling about weed recently was like, you know, I've been using it a lot to just medicate in terms of like for depression because it instantly just lifts me out of it. A lot of the ways that like boozing would, like it just like shuts a part of my brain off that it shuts off my feelings. And so, but with weed, I was just feeling like there was a hangover effect. Like as much as you don't get hungover from weed, as much as you do from alcohol, there was just, I just don't think it's worth it anymore. The good does not outweigh the bad. And so I've eliminated that from my life. But when you start taking away those things, other things pop up and I think you just get more sad. So maybe not drinking as much has brought on your depression a bit more.
You fucking nailed it. That's exactly what I was going to say, is that that's what's fucked up about this, is that this is when the sadness kind of kicked in because I lost that escape for 10 hours a week or whatever the time I was. That's what you're doing. You're just escaping from your world when you're on drugs or alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I was like, oh shit, I'm in my head 24/7. There's that escape's gone because I don't smoke because it makes me crazy.
Yeah.
So booze was like my one like vice.
What do you do now though? And what are the thoughts you're having? Just like I'm a piece of shit. I can't provide.
Yeah,
like,
my weight. I mean, open to the basically the reality that I have food addictions.
Yeah,
and that I am an overeater.
Likewise, and I think many people listening, if not all, have food issues too. I mean,
what do you mean? Are you an overeater? Is what you're saying?
Oh yeah. I definitely have binge eating tendencies,
really?
But you wouldn't know because I then will on the other, I mean, I haven't starved myself or binged in like 4 or 5 months. I've been like abstinent from those behaviors.
Yeah.
And it's been like those got really loud for me when I went into quarantine and couldn't keep myself busy with work. Cause that's what I was like really getting off on, was just like working all the time. And, and then suddenly I had all this time to eat and pay attention more to my like food behaviors. And it just was like, I don't know about you, but like, I just like only was looking forward to eating. And then when I was done, I was just sad about how much I just ate. So it was like being hungover afterwards. And then the only time you get excited is like right before, like it just starts having diminishing returns. And then when you're in between the food, you're just like miserable. You're either like anticipating it and nervous and like planning it too much and thinking about it too much, or you're coming off it and feeling like such a piece of shit for how much you just ate.
Right.
And so I would always follow up my binges. Well, I was doing like intermittent fasting, which is just like fucking adult anorexia.
Yeah.
And so I would just starve all day, eat a ton at night, like all through the night. Like I would have to wake up in the middle of the night and eat in the middle of the night. And I mean, I talked about this on the show. Like I was like in it, but I was like joking about it. Like, oh, I eat things during the night, eat in the middle of the night. I know I'm not alone here. Like I used to do that. And I, it was getting to the point where I was like, okay, well, I'm never, when is this going to stop? This isn't healthy to wake up in the middle of the night eating. And so, but it's a hard cycle to break because it's when you binge, brutal. You want to starve yourself, but then starving leads to another binge. And right. Or over exercising leads to another binge. So what you have to do is start like eating. I mean, how I found like, you know, serenity in this realm of my life through a lot of different things, but generally the biggest boon to my recovery from having an eating disorder and having disordered eating, which I'm not out of the woods. I'm still very weird with food, but I just eat breakfast. Like I fucking wake up and I try to eat three meals a day
right.
and hit all the food groups. And not try to do anything sneaky where I'm starving myself or I'm like, and if you just, I was always so scared of eating enough because I was scared that I would still binge if I ate enough. Like I would like, oh, you don't understand. I can't eat normal meals because on top of that, I'll also binge. Yeah. Well, maybe you were binging because you were fucking not eating enough. Like
right, your body you're just was physically fucking starving.
But then there's another side of it. Like, I don't think I'm a binger for sure. And I can eat insane amounts of food. Like people don't understand. I mean, I was bulimic for a while because right. it was like so bad. And now it's been 10 years since I've like purged, but I've definitely been like exercise bulimic where I'd like work out a ton to burn it off. I just starve the next day. It was just like a miserable existence. But there is a whole thing of like being a food addict where you might look at what you are eating and decide that like you have to literally never eat certain foods again because they trigger something in your brain that makes you can't stop.
You're right. That's exactly
the way some people are with alcohol.
Correct. It's just an addiction. It's like saying I'm an alcoholic. Well, I'll just have one beer and then put it away. You can't do
yes.
that.
Yes. Whereas we might be able to do that with beer, you and I, and like have a couple here and there, even though I don't do that because I don't want to play I don't play with fire in that way. Cause I might have that with alcohol because I tend to do like to get blackout drunk. Right. But with there's certain foods, I don't really have those foods in my life or I haven't like found them. Cause it takes a while to figure out what foods you may avoid, but there are people out there that literally don't eat sugar. Birthday parties. They don't eat cake. They don't eat white flour. They literally go throughout their lives and it brings them peace again to put away this thing that is so socially accepted.
Right.
And you feel like a big old weirdo when you turn down a birthday cake or you turn down ice cream or you turn down candy or treats.
Right.
But sometimes you might have a thing where it's like, that's going to fuck up your world. And so you have to put your foot down about it. But I think it's just important to talk about these things because I think so many people out there, like when I see someone who is obese, I know it's not in every case because there's certain scenarios where people eat normally and they still can't control their weight. And it's like, it's not about overeating. But most of the time when I see someone who is very overweight, I'm like, that's someone with an addiction that you can just see. Yeah. Like that with a terrible, a deadly addiction that they are having to walk around with. Like, because people can get away with having like, you know, meth addictions you normally see, even though you can't always.
Right.
There are people like, you know, who have pill addictions and they die. They die because they combine a wrong amount of pills.
Yeah.
And and they die from it and you would have never known because it was but when I see someone who's obese, I'm like, that's not just obese. Like that's someone who's in a lot of pain and using food as a drug to like numb themselves. And it You're breaks right. my heart because
sure.
I've done that. I've used starving can also be used that way. Like I get high when I starve, like it makes me feel in control and about my life. And it's all I can think about. Like that's the problem. Addiction is something that you have that it's all you can think about and it starts to make your life a living hell. I'm learning about addiction now because I'm reading that book that Joe Rogan recommended called Irresistible about our phones. We all have fucking phone addictions.
Yeah, it's bad.
Do you?
I just saw I do my average hours a day and last week it was 5.1 hours a day.
That's not bad.
Is that good?
It's not good by any means.
Okay, I thought that was pretty awful.
But I think mine is
5 hours a day. I'm asleep for 8 hours a day. So what the fuck am I doing? Like, that's damn near half my day.
I just got my report and it said I was down like 7% and I was so fucking excited. Where did it say it? God, I want to find it.
Yeah, I just got mine last night.
I was so psyched when it told me because I was like, yes, I dropped by 7%. And it was probably because I took a nap. You know what I mean? Like it was probably just, you know, but I've started blocking people on Instagram, not blocking, but muting a ton of people on Instagram that are making me feel like obsessed and like, what is she up to? What's her career doing? Like, I just... if you mute people that upset you and their career and their success threaten you and make you feel insecure,
yeah,
which is so embarrassing to admit, and it's totally your problem, it's not theirs. But everyone struggles with it. Just mute them. Yeah. And I know, and if you want to go look at what they're doing, you can just look them up. But I swear to God, once you mute someone, you like forget they exist.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I literally thought some people like, used to be this one girl on Twitter that would trigger me so much. Like, she was just too beautiful. She was too successful. She was too funny all the time. And one day I muted her because she did something that pissed me off. And then years went by and I never encountered her name at all in those years. Like, she never bothered me at all. And someone brought up and I was like, I haven't thought about her in years. And I used to think about her hourly.
Right.
Such freedom. You can have freedom from these things.
But yeah, you just scrub the negativity out of it. Yeah. That's just eliminated. That's all the mute is.
It's so good.
This is terrible as a comedian. I fucking hate it. I hate social. I don't even do it. Like, I don't even post anymore.
That's good.
It's not Nikki, because
You'll get to a point where you
do have to be a point. Like, that's just the world you live in. If you want to be a comedian, you need to partake in social media.
Well, you can
at my level, at least. Like,
I know.
If you hit a point, maybe you can back off.
No, you really can't. You can't. But what you can do is you don't need to consume it. You can just put it out there. And you can literally, Taylor Swift follows zero people.
Right.
You know, she's just putting stuff out. I mean, she definitely has a private account where she's checking out the competition. Right. I definitely think so. But you can definitely, you can put out stuff because you can put out stuff. You do you used to do hilarious shit.
I did. It was kind of in the form of what you just said of, I would then just start gazing at other things and I would get annoyed, especially politicals, because the political world, I'm very passionate in that world of how upset it makes me. And then there's always something in that world that will set you off. And that's another thing, which I was actually talking to your dad about. Like, I watch too much news.
You've got to get away from that. It's killing us.
It's
killing us.
It is. And I get angry, and I'm already an angry guy by nature.
Like, unless you're running for office anytime soon, stop watching that. You don't need to be informed. You already know how you're going to vote. Unless you're like really working on trying to convince your parent, like getting the talking points to convince someone in your life to vote the way that you think that they should vote. Like, what do you don't need to be this informed. What do you need to?
Yeah, you're right. When you break it down, what is this for? I'm just watching Chris Cuomo to get pissed off.
Yeah.
Who I love the man. I think he's the greatest guy in the world. I think Chris Cuomo is the man.
I don't know much about him.
He's hot. He's so fucking hot. He's 50. He's built. He's everything I want to be. And I'm not. I'm 40, fat, fucking.
You said the other night on stage.
Oh, it's just a bit. Yeah.
That you were like, I just turned. What did you say?
I go. I just turned 50. It's just a parlor trick.
I know. And then you yell at them because they've accepted that no one protested.
Right, but which they're not going to. That's why it's a trick. It's just a cheap trick. So
it's too old. There's no way. No one's gonna believe you're 50 years old, Sean. It's just not.
No, but the line gets a good laugh. That's like the only thing I got a laugh on the other night was saying that. I thought.
So. No, that is a good line. No, you.
Just saying. Actually, I turned 40. You guys as a group are just like, no, I can buy that. I can see that. Yeah, there's a shoe fits there. You know, no, you may be 54, but take it easy. You know, so. Just fucking nonsense. Because all my act is just all this long drawn out. But yeah, no, the new shit is just like, you're probably onto something in the sense that, yeah, it is just toxic for your head to just see all this fucking bickering. And then it's just like, nobody's changing their mind. Like, that's why I think it's funny. They're trying to say, like, to any undecided, who the fuck is undecided right now?
I know.
Anyone? Nobody is. I what, know. Right? How, what are you possibly waiting
Let's
for?
Let's just
by
vote. Let's all just vote now. It's like no one's going to change their mind. Although I will say that watching the DNC the other night made me extremely excited about Joe Biden in a way that I was not before. Because I was kind of like reluctantly like, okay, I guess Biden. And now I'm like, oh my God, we have been so devoid of someone with empathy and like a soul in the White House. Like just the mere fact that he calls his grandchildren every single day, all of his grandkids, he calls them every day. And he's been the vice president. He was the vice president for 8 years and like is a very busy man. It says something to me about his character.
Of course.
I was so touched by his speech and everyone else's speeches like the other night, the one night I watched it. So I felt a renewed sense of hope. Yeah. That I'm glad I watched that, but I feel like we need more of that. We need more positivity. Definitely. I think we miss Ellen. We need her back.
What do you think of all that shit? do you think she's as evil as they're saying, or is that all bullshit?
I think she's probably not that nice, but like, I don't think she should be canceled for not being nice.
Yeah,
I really like everyone make their own judgment call on whether or not you want to enjoy her after you know who she truly is. But I don't think she deserves to lose a show for being like revealed as being kind of an unpleasant person. Although the story about her calling the restaurant and telling the restaurant to fire a waitress because the waitress had chipped nail polish, which is a true story, is so telling of a person and so disturbing. That alone, I was like, I don't know if I'll ever see her the same way. Although Ellen is one of my favorite comedians of all time, and I hope she just gets honest about it and is like, yeah, I'm kind of not as nice as I've portrayed myself to be. How refreshing would that be if she just got honest? That is the problem with these guys that get caught being gross and being like, just tell us you're gross. Tell us you've done these things, and we'll. I just want to be able to trust my comedians.
Right.
I just want everyone to be honest. And I know you can't be honest about if like you're a, you know, people who are doing illegal things are criminals, so they're not going to be honest. But then, I don't know. If it turns out somehow that I've been inauthentic on stage, and it's revealed that like something I've said is the opposite of my character, I would hope that you would stop listening to me because I've lost your trust.
Right.
So that's what I look for. And I'm just, but I've always kind of heard these things about Ellen, and I've always enjoyed her. Even I don't like watch her show or anything, but I think her observations are still funny. And as long as she's not like talking about, you know, I don't know. I think I'll still enjoy watching the clips of her with kids and stuff. I think she's still genuine in those moments.
I think it's like there's that whole like separate the art from the artist bullshit. But it's like, I guess there's got to be a line somewhere, because it would be kind of fucked up if like I still listen to Bill Cosby records. That would kind of bother some people, right? If I said that?
Yeah, but I mean, if he's not talking about like being a good person and just some observation, I think like sociopaths can still make kind of quirky observations.
Right, but I'm saying, like, if I still say I support Bill Cosby.
Oh, if you support, that'd be weird. If you're, like, anticipating his next album from fucking
If I was just saying I'm a Rikers, fan of someone is. Like that, would you be like, well, no, you don't.
No, I wouldn't respect you because he's, honestly, I would not respect you because he's not funny. He never has. I would be like, you have bad taste in comedy, more so than, like, moralistically.
Right, yeah.
But
I never got the hype with him either.
Yeah. But, we got to wrap it up. Sean O'Brien, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today, coming over to my parents' house and hanging with my dad in the kitchen, who was wearing your shirt.
I know. He's.
Well, I mean, I'm just happy he's wearing a shirt. He's so often shirtless around the house.
I love your dad. I wish he was my dad.
He is the best dad. I had a really good moment with him the other night. Yeah. All right. We're going to go hang out with him. Thanks so much for joining us. And see you tomorrow on the podcast, guys. Thanks for listening. Squirt, squirt, jackpot.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.